All right, here we go, here we go. Here we go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go, let's go.
Got through the field. He's got through. 35, 30.
What are we getting on punt?
Logan intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
Paul Dottino and Roman Oben with you for the next hour. Our phone number is 201-939-4513, 201-939-4513, or hit us up on Twitter at hashtag Giants Chat. Now, the Giants are out on the field right now, practicing as they continue to prepare for the Houston Texans, a 2-0 team. Giants, of course, 0-2. A team that, Roman, I believe is almost a mirror image of the Giants in that I've been saying all along the Giants have a blueprint of three things they need to do to be competitive and win. They need to run the ball, which the Texans are doing a good job of, and the Giants not so good. They need to make sure they play stout defense and win the turnover battle, which the Texans are doing. They've only given up 20 points total over 2 weeks. Giants inconsistent through the first two games defensively. Giants are minus six in turnovers. And Houston is plus five in turnovers. So they're getting that going. And then the third thing was the Giants' offense, I've always said, they got to figure out what they are. And until they do, they need to manage games. And they need to play it close to the vest and low risk. They haven't done that. And, of course, they had to play from behind against Detroit. That kind of hurt the situation because Eli started forcing it. That's one of the reasons the turnovers happened. Well, Houston, guess what? Ryan Fitzpatrick, zero interceptions so far this season. And as coach said the other day, Coach Tom Coughlin, the Texans are playing with the lead, I believe, in seven of the eight quarters so far this season. So they have followed the Dottino blueprint. The Giants have not, and that's why they're 2-0. How about that?
Well, I think in terms of stats, specifically, you know, the first few weeks of the season, I think some of those stats can become a little convoluted. I don't believe a team's full identity is presented to the National Football League in the first 2 weeks of the season. And people will argue about the quality of the teams that the Texans have played. But 2-0 is 2-0. You can't argue
Washington
with that.
And Oakland.
Washington and Oakland. But then 0-2 is also 0-2. And that's what the Giants are. I think this game is a winnable game for the Giants 100%. But I think the equalizer, in addition to the things that you said, style of play, the way this team is constructed. This defense, Paul, in my opinion, has to create turnovers. They have to force Fitzpatrick to throw interceptions. He had a history of that in Buffalo. When you get him in a lot of third and long situations, he starts sacking his quarterback, any quarterback for that matter. But Ryan Fitzpatrick, I know he's a smart guy, went to Harvard, all that stuff, and he's earned his way, you know, to the top in terms of being a starter in the National Football League. Not having come from a historically rich football tradition on the Division I level, but he has turned the ball over, and I think that's something that this defense is missing. You started seeing it in week two with the sack production. JPP had 1.5 sacks. You saw Hankins had a sack in the middle. You saw three or four guys swarming the quarterback of the Arizona Cardinals last week. But now the turnovers have to happen. Special teams big plays have to happen. Offensively, Paul, last week, you saw a 13-play drive for 90 yards that took off 7 minutes, 12 seconds off the clock. You're seeing some improvements offensively. This is a game where you just have to put it all together because, in my opinion, I've never gone 0-3 in the National Football League.
Never?
I looked at all the records. I've never gone 0-3.
Are you sure?
My rookie year, Dan Reeves' last year, I think we did win a game, one of those three. Then we lost four. Then we won. But just the psychology of going 0-3 starts to send a different message, not only to the outside public, the writers, the fans, but just in the locker room. You start questioning everything. You start, should I bend my knee? Should I do this? Should I drive a different way to work? All those things psychologically start to become questioned because this team went through this last year. So this team cannot go 0-3 for a lot of reasons. But for me, my analysis specifically, how that's viewed in the locker room. Because when you haven't won a game in a month, and especially that month is the early part of the season, there are bigger issues that get microanalyzed throughout the course of the football team that continues to become a downward spiral in the psychology of what it takes to just win a game in the NFL.
So yesterday when Justin Pugh told us that, you know, there are over two dozen guys in this locker room who were not here last year and did not have to suffer through 0-6 and that those guys will fight and they don't know what that's all about, You're not buying it. You're saying that the 0-6 residue from last year is still like a black cloud around this team.
Look, you still need a good quarterback and receiver relationship. That's a la Reuben Randle. You still need that. You still need to protect the quarterback. You still need the offensive line to play at a higher level. Injuries or not, everyone's injured in the NFL. Everyone's hurt. Everyone's missing a guy or two. You still need those things to happen. You still need to run the ball well. So there are elements of things that happened last year, the first two games of the season. Now, you have different pieces of the in the puzzle now. You've added running backs that are physical downhill runners. You get BD back. You get some additions to the offensive line. You do have some better chess pieces, but if the execution is the same, then it goes back to the psychology of just learning how to win. You have a franchise quarterback, and I'm going to say Eli Manning's a franchise quarterback, but you've got to help him. You've got to help him defensively. You've got to help him on first, second down, when he hands the ball off, not when he's throwing, when he hands the ball off. And when he does throw the ball, you've got to catch the ball.
Can't have nine drops in the first two games.
Absolutely not. I know we have a phone call.
Yeah, 201-939-4513. Derek from North Dakota, you're first on the program. Hello. Hello, good to talk to you. We'll pump up the phone line on the mixer, and then we should be all good. Hello, Derek. How are you?
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, I have a couple questions. What's the status of Odell Beckham? When will he play? I mean, what's the status of him?
Look, as Tom Coughlin has told us, they got to get him out there in full practice first before you can even think about putting him in a game. He's so far behind. I still tell people, Roman, that when he does get on the field for the Giants at first, he's probably only going to be a punt returner because I don't think he knows enough of this offense to be counted on to be an important cog. Now, maybe they'll get him four or five plays, Roman, and maybe he'll see some spot duty as a cameo on offense. But to expect him to be an immediate elixir for this team right now, it's not going to happen.
No, I don't think – I mean, you look at the plight, if you will, of where Corey Washington went. Throughout five preseason games, training camp, all those practices, all those reps, I would have loved to see Odell Beckham make that jump throughout the preseason. And a guy who obviously is much better athletically, is a much better talent. I mean, Corey Washington is a great success story, but I think this team, to me, the identity of this team has been about, we love the surprises. We love when a guy, like, we love a Larry Donnell story. We love those stories.
Sure. Who doesn't?
Corey Washington. The guys, if you will, with the big contracts that are supposed to get it done, those guys should still lead the charge. Those guys should still play well. It was encouraging to see JPP have a sack and a half last night. It was encouraging to see him opening day against Detroit tackle for loss. I mean,
he's active.
He's saying, I mean, he told you in preseason he's 110% in your interview, I remember. So those guys still got to lead the charge. And again, Odell Beckham is the guy. I'm not a doctor, and Ronnie Barnes and that crew and Dr. Russ Warren, and they do a tremendous job, better than any medical staff in the league. But a hamstring is an injury that can be 1 week or 10 weeks, and you don't know. I can't answer that question.
Look,
so
as of now, he's still not practicing.
Yeah.
Okay, let's make that clear. He's still not practicing yet.
I'd love to say that you can get Odell Beckham from week four on to the rest of the season. Week five on. I mean, like, we were almost teased.
It Giants may not fans, be to the bye week, Roman. He's so far behind.
Giants fans were teased in the third week of preseason when he started doing more. Well, not this week, but probably next week. And that was 4 weeks ago.
And that's when Tom Coughlin shut down the conversation and said, I don't want to talk about him until he gets out there.
So I have to believe that there's a deeper issue with the hamstring. I don't know. And I'm not a doctor. I don't know. You have a hamstring injury for 4 months. I don't know. I mean, people have come back from high ankle sprains, broken arm, broken bones in a quicker time than this hamstring issue.
I had somebody, I guess he was a Mets fan, made a comment to me on Twitter the other day. He said the only hamstring of this nature that he can remember being a problem for so long was with Jose Reyes, the Mets shortstop, who seemed to have one for almost the entire season a few years ago, remember?
Right.
So in any event, it is what it is. But right now, Preston Parker, the former Buccaneer who played for 3 years in Tampa Bay, then last year was out of football and was building tiki huts in Florida for $100 a day. The guy was impoverished. It is quite a story how he has come back to the league, tried to make the Giants, did make the Giants, and he's tough, He's physical. He runs good routes. He usually grabs the ball pretty well when it's in the air. I will tell you this about him, Roman. He is so grateful and appreciative for this chance coming from where he's come from. You know you're going to get 100% out of him on every snap.
Yeah, and again, that's another success story, Paul. Preston Parker, where he went, and I know the story well, and it was out of football, and again, but Preston Parker should be your third or fourth option. Obviously, Jernigan's injured. He's out, so Preston Parker moves.
He's now number three.
Yeah, Victor Cruz and Ruben Randall should be playing at a high level. Four or five catches, 90 yards, two touchdowns every week, and then Preston Parker becomes a compliment.
Right.
Again, we can't keep talking about this, the surprises and the success stories, and not talk about the other half of that argument, which is the guys who are dropping balls and not on page the quarterback, or the guys who are giving up big plays defensively, or missing tackles on special teams,
yeah,
or coughing the ball up. I mean, those are the guys that we have to hold accountable.
All right, 201-939-4513, or hashtag Giants Chat. Paul Dottino and Roman Oben with you on Big Blue Kickoff Live. We'll be taking you up until the 1 o'clock hour Eastern time, for those of you watching across the country and maybe around the world, Roman.
We never know. I think, so that means you're international, Paul.
Yeah. Well, some people think I'm out of this world, actually, Roman. But that's another story.
I'm one of them. No.
Let's go back to the phone calls. Do we have another call available? Let's go. Hello, you're next on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Hello.
Hi, Paul. Hi, Roman. Good morning.
Hi.
Listen, for the past couple of weeks, I've been, you know, when we get the toss, I've been thinking, you know, if we win the toss, let's give them the ball. But you know what? They've been going right down the field on us and scoring on the first possession. So this weekend, we want the ball. I want to win the toss. I want the ball. And I want to put our offense on the field, and I want them to go down the field and score. And let's not play from behind anymore. Let's play right up front. Let's play from giant smash-mouth football. And if they get the toss and they get the ball, how about a three and out and stopping them? If we can do that, we're gonna win the game. That'll set the tone of the game. The first possession just seems to set the tone of the game, and they've been marching down the field on us. Both the Cardinals did it, and so did the Lions. They both ran that ball right down our throat and scored real quick, and a pass, big pass them in Detroit that scored ridiculous. We just need to stop them. If they get the toss, three and out, and if we get the win, let's march the ball down the field and score.
Hey, that's a great formula. I mean, easier said than done, obviously, but thanks for your call. Again, I've been on teams, Paul, where you wanted to win the coin toss because you were going to defer it, and you trusted your defense to go out there and three and out so offense can get good field position, and you're getting the ball opening up second half because you've probably got a lead, a la Tampa Bay Buccaneers when I was in Tampa, and Derek Brooks and Warren Sapp. I mean, it's like we won the coin toss 12 out of 16 times, and we gave the ball to the offense, and that really sent a message, especially at home when you can do that. That hasn't been the case, obviously. But,
right,
again, you have to play 60 minutes, bottom line, is what I wanted to add to that call. You have to play 60 minutes. It's got to come down in the fourth quarter. You know, most teams, most games in the league are won or lost by less than 4 points in the fourth quarter. And whether it's a special teams mistake, a costly turnover, it can always go back to that. Now, the momentum starting fast is something you always want. But, again, that's not always the case. But for me, the bottom line is you've got to play 60 minutes football, and you've got to really limit mistakes in the fourth quarter.
Len from Maryland, you're going to get to you in just a second. I want to hit up some of these Twitters. Courtney says, I have faith the Giants will make a comeback in this week's game against Houston. Let's go, Big Blue. Eddie Gumbaz says, sounds like Derek didn't listen to one of our other callers who has this hamstring ailment cure, so to speak. I won't even get into that, Roman. It's another time, another discussion for another time. But, yeah, I guess he's talking about actually Devon Kennard.
Right.
Kennard's got a hamstring issue, and quite frankly, they could use him this week, but it doesn't look like he's going to be able to go. This is because Beeson is out with the toe thing. Easy BKNY says, do you think Pugh and Jerry are strong enough and athletic enough to stop J.J. Watt's rush? I know they will have him at left defensive end and inside. Roman, let me go into J.J. Watt right now because it's a good time to do it. He will line up everywhere along that defensive front. Everybody on that offensive line needs to know his moves. They need to have looked at his film, and they need to have some kind of clue as to what they're going to do to try to contain him. But truthfully, it's a team effort, isn't it?
Yeah, it's 100% team effort, and I put J.J. Watt in that. I put J.J. Watt in that category of Michael Strahan, Reggie White, guys that are equally as effective run downs and passing downs.
Yeah, he's good.
I've seen J.J. Watt on film. The film that I've seen their first two games, he destroyed the Raiders' offensive line. You know, against Washington, he makes his own plays. I mean, standing up offensive guards, shedding them, throwing like ragdolling a guard. I mean, these are 340-pound guys and tackling the ball carrier by himself. And this has nothing to do with a scheme or a blitz or a twist or linebackers. And there's a reason why a guy like J.J. Watt is one of the ambassadors of the league and why he's effective. He's got good hand use, good explosiveness. He's a big guy that can play quick as well, 6'5", 290. He can play right end in a sub package like a pass rusher. He can play left end like a Mike Strahan. He can beat tackles and tight ends, get in the backfield, and he's a good inside rusher. So that's a good matchup, or it's a bad matchup for these offensive guards and centers in the league that I've seen who are considered phone booth players. I mean, he makes those guys stretch and move their legs, and that's how he tosses guys and gets in the backfield. And the last thing I would say about J.J. Watt, just in terms of film study, as an offensive lineman, most guys that play in a 3-4 scheme are considered slugs, right? He's a slug. He's a two-gap guy.
Okay.
He's a 3-4 guy that can play a 4-3 and that can play a traditional shoot the B-gap, come up field guy. He can do both. And there aren't a lot of guys, and this is just, you know, I know the Giants are playing the Texans. I'm not. This is just analyzing football. They don't make players like J.J. Watt anymore. I mean, this guy could have played in the 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000s. I mean, he's that type of a player.
Is it fair to say he's a more polished version of what JPP was 3 years ago?
He's a different type of player.
Stronger.
I don't see JPP ever being a 3-4 defensive lineman.
Okay.
I think he's a pure 4-3 defensive end. And that's fine. I mean, there's still a small percentage of teams that run a 3-4 defense, Paul. There's always like less than a half a dozen or so to 10 teams that run a 3-4 defense. But you don't have a lot of guys that run that. I mean, JPP is a penetrator. He could take the tight end
right.
and tackle, but I don't see JPP doing a lot inside as a pass rusher. J.J. Watt can kind of do all. But they're both equally effective, great players, but when they both play at a high level, I mean, you'd like to have either of them if you could build your own football
yeah,
team.
Yeah, not a bad idea.
Yeah.
Not a
and,
bad
and
idea.
Thank goodness, and not for this young man, but Jadeveon Clowney is out. So that what this Texan defense wanted to appear to be in preseason was going to be a menace and a nightmare for opposing offensive linemen and quarterbacks. But thank goodness for the Giants. They only have to deal with J.J. Watt and not
right.
first pick overall in addition to J.J. Watt.
Okay, let's go back to the phone calls. Is this Elijah or Len? This is Len. Okay, Len, you're next up on the show. Hi. Hello, Len, are you there? I think we lost him. All right. Give us a call back. We'll try to get you on 201-939-4513. All right, some more Twitter questions here, Roman. We got
Before you go to that, Paul,
yeah.
I'm always appreciative because we should talk about our Twitter. I mean, even during games or during the week, you do a great job of answering people's Twitter questions, like, immediately. And your Twitter is at
Giants WFAN.
Giants WFAN. I'm at @R_OBEN. @R_OBEN. So a lot of Giants fans, even as a result of this show, will tweet at me directly and mention. I'll respond whenever I have time. I don't live and die by my phone like most people, but we're definitely appreciative of this platform. And Giants fans ask honest, tough questions, and we respond. And this is a great platform.
Well, so. They're energetic. They come after
oh,
you.
Oh, yeah. So
I'll tell you this. And fans know, on game day, I am so focused on what I'm doing that I usually don't do much on Twitter at all.
Yeah.
You may see two or three tweets from me on game day. It's during the week that you guys want to hit me
yeah,
up.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, during the week, during times, and I know this is seen online, but, Paul, you're at Giants WFAN, and I'm at @R_OBEN. So that's a free plug for
there
our
Twitter. There you
Twitters. Go. But Giants fans – I definitely identify with a lot of the questions because a lot of them are the same. So
Ben Koviu says, I don't understand the gloom and doom after last game. I was 100% more encouraged after the last game than I was the first game, and with good reason. The Giants played better against the Cardinals. Johnny J.P. Hedden 123 says, McClain, the starting middle linebacker, maybe Passenger and Williams on the outside. That's the likely scenario if Beeson can't go, and we don't think he will. But that's to be determined. Tom Coughlin would not rule him out because Beeson's a tough son of a gun, and you're never going to say he's not going to play if you can avoid it. It does appear that based on what we heard yesterday from Pasinger, that he and Herzlick were splitting reps on that outside spot next to McLean. Interesting call there, Roman, because, you know, Herzlick has shown at times to be a step or two behind the play.
Well, I'm a bigger fan of Pasinger just for the simple fact of his range.
Right.
Pasinger has more range, I think, at that position.
Herzlick may be a little bit better of a tackler fundamentally in terms of how he squares guys up.
Yeah, but when you get Herzlick out in space,
exactly.
There could be some vulnerability. I mean, you're talking about running back for the Texans. Arian Foster. I was going to say Adrian Robinson. He's tied in for the Giants. Arian Foster, who can be a problem in the secondary. If you don't tackle him soundly, if you get in space, I mean, he's a good one-on-one runner out in the open field.
Yeah.
And we have another phone call.
Let's go back. Is this Lee? Hello, you're
Elijah
next.
Elijah from Indiana.
Or Elijah, okay. You're next.
Hey, guys.
Kickoff Live. Hey. Hello.
Hey, I have two questions, one about the offense and one about the defense.
Shoot.
For the offense. To be honest, I think our offensive line is doing pretty good. And I have a question about the – oh, I think I just forgot my question.
Don't be nervous.
Oh,
it's okay.
I got it. So, are you keeping John Jerry at the right guard spot, or are you bringing Mosley back? I like John Jerry more than Mosley.
Well, it appears right now, and thanks for the call, it appears right now that Jerry is the guy at starting right guard. Mosley was during training camp and then lost the job when his back flared up. Jerry stepped in, and he's been, like, okay. I'll be honest with you, Roman. I think as I watch it, he's been better as a pass protector than he has been a run blocker.
You know, which is the irony of that is he's such a big guy.
Right.
John Jerry's 340 pounds. I mean, I have to move out of the way in the hallway. I'm only about 275, so I'm a lot smaller than I was when I played. But you kind of got to move out of the way in the hallway when you see John Jerry walking towards you. But yeah,
no, he is the hallway.
Yeah, exactly. But he's a better pass. So he's one of these big, physical, but he's an athletic guy. I mean, he started the last 2 years for the Dolphins, so he started in the league.
Sure.
And I remember that Jets game that he had in preseason, which wasn't a great game. I think he got tossed by Richardson in the backfield, and got, I mean,
good
got,
player.
It's physical play. I mean, I can always deal with a physical mistake versus a mental.
Right.
Physical, you can correct.
Right.
Mental, you have to say, okay, is this guy focused, concentrated? But he had a great game that last preseason game and really cemented himself to be able to play, start at right guard and make the team. But in terms of the running game, and I think the running game, the focal point of a running game is that center, right guard, and right tackle in terms of that point of attack. And getting that running back to the line of scrimmage and be able to cut back, and that's the left side, you know, the seal-off guy. So I would like to see John Jerry, I mean, really start to dominate in the running game as well as the passing game. I played with a right guard by the name of Ron Stone, who you know very well, became a Pro Bowler, came over from Dallas, didn't even start in Dallas, and came here, became a Pro Bowler. But again, I mean, when I see a right guard and I envision, I see Ron Stone, that's who John Jerry really needs to become. Kind of a butt-kicking right guard.
He needs to pulverize people.
Exactly.
Let's go to Len from Maryland. You're next on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Hello.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Hey, what's up, Len?
Excellent.
Okay. Roman, good to be able to talk to you.
What part of Maryland are you from?
From Columbia, Maryland.
Columbia.
Now, you're either a Landon or a Friends guy. Where'd you go to high school?
Oh, Gonzaga. Huh? Come on. Landon.
Oh, Gonzaga. I'm sorry. I had you going to one of those other private schools.
That's all right.
Yeah, Gonzaga. Good football program, Roman.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Yeah.
Your question.
Oh, yeah. Listen, you know, I wanted to talk about the upcoming opponent, obviously. Just a couple of things. I guess this makes me an expert. I did see their game against Houston because they were on down here in the Washington area. And, you know, the one thing that kind of got to me was the speed of this team, particularly on defense. Not so much on offense, but on defense. Jeez, these guys really fly around. They're very quick. The holes close quick. You know, Watt, you were speaking about it before, Roman. Watt sets the pace. I mean, he makes everybody better. He's better than good, Roman. He's better than very good. This guy is, I mean, he's just, You know, I don't know. You know, I wanted to talk to you about matchups. You know, if he comes across, you know, Will Beatty. I just want to say one thing. You know, I thought Beatty has played well in the last two games, but I think this may be a little too dramatic. But his future with the Giants is going to be decided in the next 5 days, between J.J. Watt and Hatcher in Washington.
Len, I would say this, though, and help me out here, Roman. I would say that the Giants are not going to leave Will Beatty out on an island against J.J. Watt. I have to believe that we're going to see a lot more snaps out of Henry Hanoski to be able to give him some help. Roman, wouldn't you think so?
Yeah, and listen, J.J. Watt, I think we had this discussion. J.J. Watt isn't a traditional right defensive end. You know, Jason Taylor who's now in Denver and longer in Dallas. He's not a traditional right end where he stays at that spot the whole game and you chip and you slide. When you break the huddle, you don't know where J.J. Watt's going to line up.
Right.
And that's the most compelling thing about this defense.
Well, isn't that why, though, it's important that Hanoski's there at fullback so that he can read the defense, see where Watt is, and he can help out whichever of the linemen need it?
But one thing you can't do, Paul, you can't compromise the integrity of what you're trying to do for one guy. I mean, there was a guy that played for the Giants. I don't know if you ever heard of him. His name was Lawrence Taylor.
Yeah, I heard him.
And guys would compromise. I mean, remember the old story when Ron Jaworski – looked,
yes.
He didn't see Lawrence Taylor call the timeout because he knew where he was. They couldn't slide to him. They couldn't chip him. But J.J. Watt, he can line up at right end, right defensive tackle, left defensive tackle. Let's not forget, and this Ken O'Brien, the head coach for the
– Bill O'Brien.
Bill O'Brien, sorry. Head coach for the Houston Texans. This is a New England Patriots system. You know, Romeo Crennel is the defense coordinator.
Aggressive.
Mike Vrabel, who played – a long time with is I think he's a linebacker's defensive line coach. So they've taken this model of what they did with Richard Seymour, and you know, I mean, they're moving him around. They're trying to create one-on-one situations for him. There's 10 other guys you have to worry about. This caller from Maryland is right about the overall team speed of this defense. They're very smart. They're very tough. They play physical, and they like to exploit the offense based on what they don't think the offense does well. So those kind of games, like this is going to be a blue-collar football game. But if you're trying to chip and get a guy in the slide, you start sliding left, he's going to be over Pugh. I saw him, the right tackle for the Redskins, I think it's Trey, I don't remember. I'm going to say Trey.
Not Johnson. No.
Trey Johnson. That was the old
days.
He's
gone.
I saw him push a guy, right tackle, in RG3's face. 340-pound, he pushed him all the way back into the lap of the quarterback, stood up and deflected the pass. And that line was sliding left. So that meant the right tackle was on an island by himself and J.J. Watt.
Oh, Trent Williams.
Yeah, Trent Williams, yeah.
Who's not a bad player.
No, he's like John Jerry. We're talking about the size. So O-line slid left. They took J.J. Watt, recognized the formation, put him at left end like a straight hand play. He pushed Trent Williams all the way back in RG3's lap and deflected the pass. So you can't game plan this guy. He's not going to be a right end all the time. So I hope that the fans and then I know that Ben McAdoo knows that. I'm sure they're game planning accordingly. I know we have another phone call.
Okay, Steven from California, you're next on the program. Hello. Hello, Steven. How are you? All right, 201-939-4513 is our phone number or hashtag Giants Chat. A couple of more Twitter comments here, Roman, I want to get to you. We have, let's see here, Chaz Max says, love hearing about 0-2 teams have a 16% chance to make the playoffs. Giants went 0-2 in 2011, and what happened?
Well, that's good optimism from a fan's perspective. And one thing I love about these stats, I mean, these stats, and I'm not a Las Vegas guy. Obviously, I don't gamble or I don't look at numbers or odds or the points. I still don't understand. I literally still don't understand that, how the point spread is determined, and that's my weakness. I'll admit that. But
that's okay.
You just play the percentage over the last how many years that they started counting those stats and that the likeliness of them winning. I remember a 2000 Ravens team was a 50-1 odds to win the Super Bowl, and they won the Super Bowl with Trent Dilfer.
Beat the Giants.
And, I know a friend of mine who actually, I don't know if he had $1,000 and won $50,000 that year, that the Ravens. But I say, okay, so for the next 32 years, you bet $1,000 on the Ravens, and then their odds are decreased or whatever that means. But the 0-2 stats are nice, but this isn't about the Super Bowl. And I know that the guys in the locker room are more concerned with 2014, winning this game, you know, trying to get a W on the opposite end. 1-2 looks a heck of a lot better than 0-3.
Oh, yeah.
You can't fix the past. You can't fix what happened in the past. Mm-hmm. But, again, I know that the guys in the locker room, Entrell Roll defensively, JPP, all those guys offensively, Eli Manning especially, Cruz is working to get better. The question about the drops have been addressed a lot this week. So you'd like to see a better product offensively on the field this Sunday.
Eddie Gumbaz said he wasn't talking about Kennard before. I have no idea who he was talking about when he said, sounds like Derek doesn't listen. I don't know what that was all about, Eddie, but in any event, I guess you had another thought. Looking at some of these other comments, we have Stu DiMeglio says, big issue, we are always playing from behind. How about this one? We have Aleem Gray says, I'm from Poland. And if I can listen to Big Blue Kickoff Live almost every day, by the way, it's past 6 o'clock at night. Well, enjoy your dinner. have a nice drink with it. And thanks for tuning into the program. Dean Mayers says, what's the likely return time for Kennard? Again, we don't know. Tom Coughlin says he doesn't expect him to play this weekend because of that hamstring issue. So that's just something to keep in mind. Maybe the following week. Who knows? These hamstrings seem to be a real issue around here these days. I don't have one, thank goodness.
No, I don't even know where my hamstring is.
There you go.
It was all shoulders and knees and hand issues.
Anthony Phoenix says, let's keep the Texans under 100 yards rushing and the Giants over 100 yards rushing. That's a recipe for a win. Well, those are pretty good numbers.
Yeah, and Paul, we could probably get into this discussion. I think every week you play against a guy. I mean, it was Ndamukong Suh and it was Megatron week one. Last week, obviously, Carson Palmer didn't play. They had to go, Drew Stanton was the backup. And it was like Larry Fitzgerald. He only had one catch, and now going, and they were kind of trying to get him going. You saw
and they did get him the ball.
Yeah, and you saw him using him in a slot. And in addition to a lot of the big plays that the Arizona Cardinals made last week. And this week now, obviously, it's about Arian Foster offensively and J.J. Watt defensively. And this is the NFL, guys, fans that are listening in. Every week, there's going to be a guy or two that's probably better at his position than most guys in the National Football League. But it can never be about stopping one guy. I've seen games, and Houston Texans haven't been winning for a long time. Historically, I mean, they were pretty bad until the last few years. They got over the playoff hump where Arian Foster rushes for 150 yards, J.J. Watt gets two sacks, and they still lose. So, obviously, they're the focal points of this team. But in terms of the approach, this team's approach, offensively, you've got Kyle Shanahan, who's the offensive coordinator, who kept the same system that Kubiak had, which he got from Mike Shanahan, Kyle's dad, when he was at Denver.
Yeah.
So that was a way that they kept the same cohesion and terminology offensively, that zone run and that play action pass to Andre Johnson, who we haven't even mentioned yet, who's one of the better receivers in the league as well.
Has 12 catches so far, but no touchdowns.
Yeah. Again, he's a guy they're going to try to get going this week in Giant Stadium. And one thing I want to add to that, a lot of fans won't know this, but I left the Giants, obviously played 2 years in Cleveland with the Browns, 2 years in Tampa, won a Super Bowl with the Buccaneers, and played 4 years for the Chargers as a part of the Eli trade. I went to San Diego. Players always say when you play the Giants or the Eagles or an East Coast team, you better play lights out because the whole world is watching. Playing dominant against a Giants team, there's more media, there's more coverage. If you want publicity, if you want to be recognized amongst the best, you better go do it on the road.
The Lions saw it that way.
Yeah, exactly. So one thing people don't realize, you're always going to – and John Gruden used to say this. When you're playing an East Coast team, he used to say an East Coast team, all you guys that want to consider yourselves tops of the league, you better have a good game against those guys because those are the games that media pays attention to.
We need to correct an earlier fan.
Sure.
Ben and also Marcus Hale remind us that the Giants were 1-1 in 2011 when they went on to win the Super Bowl. So they were 0-2 in 2007,
right,
which is accurate when Steve Spagnuolo came in as the new defensive coordinator, and
right,
they got hammered
yep
the first couple of weeks and then went on. So Hey, you know what? There's a lot going on here, and we don't always pick things up right away. So good correction by those couple of guys there. We appreciate that very much. All right, let's go back to the phones on Big Blue Kickoff Live, and we have Jim. Hello, you're next.
Hey, P-Dot, how you doing?
What's
Hello,
up?
Roman.
Hey,
how are you today?
Good.
I'm vice president of the Pat Hanlon Fan Club. My wife is the president, P-Dot, and she gave you the bumper sticker.
I remember seeing you at the tailgate show.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, welcome coming out.
Anyway, my question for today is the third down defense the last couple of years, not just this year, last year, but the last several years has been pretty suspect. Do you think it's an issue of the players, which have been different over the years, or third down calls in the system? I was wondering what your take on that was.
Well, I talked about, thank you, Jim, Morris Plains. I know exactly what that is. I saw for Route 10 off of 287. Yeah. We talked about this, about the stats at the early part of the season not being reflective of an entire season, but they are what they are. 2 weeks into the season, the stats are.
Sure.
I think defensively, if you're better on first and second down, just like offense, if you're better on first and second down and you're stopping the run, then and you're forcing an offense to get in long third down situations that aren't as manageable as a third and short situations, then you can put yourself in a position to try to get off the field. We talked about JPP, his absence last year, and what that meant, you know, what that meant to the team. He wasn't 100%. We talked about how the defensive line did last year. Linebacker issues, you had to get B's in week six, week five. That helped that issue. Again, they didn't stay off. They couldn't get off the field last week in certain incidences, but the run defense has improved. But when teams start to throw the ball, then they have to now stop them, create turnovers, get off the field. So third down efficiency or the ability to you know, keep a team under 38-35% on third down, which is really good in the NFL, that's a direct result of how you do on first and second downs. Forcing those second and longs, second and 12s, now become third and 12, third and 8s. And then you can call your blitzes and you can play one side and you can almost dictate because the balls have to be the routes take longer to develop. Pass protection is more important. I mean, that's when you start to play that type of defense. And fans have said it on Twitter that this defense hasn't really played with the offense in a lead all season. So playing catch-up. Now they're running the ball. The other opposing offense is running the ball at you. And you can't get in your defensive package, your blitz packages, your three safeties, NASCAR, whatever, you know, Perifuel draws up. So, again, but it's doing better on first and second down. Will help that third down percentage.
You know what's really, really weird?
What's that?
The Giants are allowing 53% conversions on third down this year, which is second worst in the NFL, only to the Seattle Seahawks, if you can believe that,
yeah,
who are giving up over 55% conversions on third down through two games. My, how the mighty have changed. The great Seahawks defense. Maybe that has to do with a lot of the way they're calling penalties. I'm not sure, but that's a bad number.
Well, what I'm seeing in the model now around the league is throw the post route and hope to get a pass interference, and that gives you a first down. But, again, I'd like to see the stat of third and shorts, third and five or less, versus third and longs. I'd like to see that stat about who gets off the field on third and longs versus a third and short.
Okay, 201-939-4513 is our phone number, or hashtag Giants Chat. Paul Dottino, Roman Oben with you. We've got about 20 minutes or so left of the program. We kick it off at 12 o'clock Monday to Friday Eastern Time each and every weekday with Big Blue Kickoff Live. Looking at some of these other Twitters that are coming in, Roman, we have somebody saying, I'm curious, this is Weehigh Cleek. Okay. I think I got that right. Weehigh Cleek. I'm curious as to the NASCAR package and which players would constitute it. I don't think there's much of a change as to what we saw in the preseason. You want your speed rushers in there? Well, it's going to wind up being JPP and DeMontre Moore and Kiwanuka. And, you know, I'm guessing Colin Jenkins is your other one, right?
Colin Jenkins, I think Ayers is a guy that
Ayers
can be a good pass rusher in terms of when you're strictly pass rush, 2 minute drill, third and longs.
He has a sack in each of the first two games.
Yeah, and he's really effective as an inside sub rusher, even putting Kiwi inside and then putting DeMontre Moore outside, and then Colin Jenkins. We talked about him.
He
as
can
well.
Be in that mix too.
I like what Colin Jenkins can do when it's a play action pass, when he uses his leverage. He's a shorter guy. He could stand up offensive guard, shed him, and then go make the sack. And that's when you see those interior linemen getting those sacks. Play action, you know, those non-traditional passing plays.
We have Triana New York says, I'm afraid for Eli's life against this D-line of the Texans. Our line needs to show up big time in this game. Well, look, there's no secret. J.J. Watt and company can bring the heat. He has 6 hits on the quarterback through 2 games, by the way. Only 1 sack. But, again, you know, Roman, we put so much emphasis a lot of times on stats.
Right.
And sacks are a great stat. But really, when you get down to it, it's pressures and it's quarterback hits that are even more important to the coaching staff, because those things will usually impact the other team's passing game even more than the sacks will. You got to get home. You got to finish, like the Giants needed to finish after the Detroit game when
right.
they got close, but Stafford made plays. But more often than not, if you can beat the living crap out of the other team's quarterback, it's going to affect him.
Yeah. And when you start hurrying throws, and when you don't let the quarterback get his feet planted
in most cases
to the ground, or you have to make a quarterback like Eli Manning, who's not a traditional making plays outside of the pocket guy, that's when you force bad throws, you get interceptions, balls get tipped, you get turnovers. So you're right. A sack is a 7 or 8 yard loss, but at least you have the ball and you can try to make up those yards. But hits, hurries, those type of things. And obviously, J.J. Watt had, I think, 18 pass deflections 1 year when he was Defensive Player of the Year 2 years ago.
And 20 sacks.
Yeah, and 20 sacks. So he's he's like a DB on the line of scrimmage deflecting those those passes. But and another thing, Paul, 2 things about the offensive line. One advantage, you're at home. So crowd noise isn't the key, won't be a case here. I played against Derek Thomas in 98 as a young left tackle. And I remember Jim Fossil coming to me and say, hey, Roman, we're not going to give you any help today. And I said, don't worry about it. We're at home. I can hear. I can get off the ball.
Okay.
And that helped our team. So some of those defensive ends in that dome, on the road, just like in Ndamukong Suh, some of those guys, it's hard to hear, and you're just a little late off the ball. And that little bit of indecision off the ball late as a lineman is the difference between you punching a guy and you missing and him getting behind you and collapsing the pocket. So you're at home, obviously, so there's a little advantage here. You're at home, you can hear the snap count. And secondly, honestly, Paul, they all get paid to do their job. And it doesn't matter if you're blocking J.J. Watt or J.J. Smith or whoever you're blocking. And I was told the same thing about John Randall or Bruce Smith or whoever. And I'm glad I was able to block against some good defensive ends in practice every day to prepare me for some of those matchups. But you get paid to do your job, and I don't think, and as a fan, fans have a natural apprehension. Oh, my goodness, J.J. Watt's going to destroy. I feel bad for Eli Manning, and what is Will Beatty going to do in Pew? But they get paid, and they're starting offensive linemen in the National Football League, Jerry, J.D. Walton and company. They've got to do their jobs, too. It can never be, as a pro athlete, it can never be about the other guy.
Funny story, Roman. I went up to Will Beatty yesterday, and I needed to ask him a question for MSG's First and Ten show about J.J. Watt. And I asked him about the challenge of facing such a dominant force who can do so many things to beat you. And he looked at me, and he goes, it's not a challenge to play J.J. Watt. He goes, I'm paid to play, and I don't look at it that way. I know what he's going to do, and I know what I have to do. And really, you have to approach it as, this is my responsibility. I've got to do what I'm being paid to do, and there's no reason to think otherwise. You have to look at it that way.
Yeah, and Paul, as an offensive lineman, like, you should be offended. Like, I remember opening day, 97, Jim Foxwell's first game, and Mike Mamula had basically ran Jumbo Elliott out of town the year before. Beat him for 3 sacks and all that stuff. And
one of Mamula's only good games.
I think it was Greg Bishop, actually not.
Yeah, it was Bishop.
And so, you know, in this article, and all week, you know, what are you going to do against Mike Mamula? I said, I'm going to block him. I'm going to fight my butt off and block him. And I was almost, by the end of the week, I was so upset about Mike Mamula. And it's like, you know, what's he going to do against me? I don't know. I was a young tackle. I mean, he'd never seen me a lot before.
Right.
And the article was, he'll be coming around the corner when he comes, in the New York Post. I'll never forget that article. I think Paul Schwartz wrote wrote the article. He didn't control the headliner, but
right.
I was so angry and ready to just kill this guy in a parking lot before he even showed up to the game that I blocked him and we won the game.
See, so the media can help you.
Well, it can help you, but it's an uncomfortable way of doing it. But again, as a football player, I'm glad that we'll be to answer that question that way. It's about what you have to do because you're a professional. He's a professional. May the best man win.
All right. 201-939-4513 or hashtag Giants chat. The Giants coming into this game, as we talked about earlier, -6 turnover ratio. It's a number that not only makes Tom Coughlin very, very upset, but it's a number that when you're a Giant team that really wants to consider itself a team that's going to be in the wild card hunt, you cannot have. We learned last year how when you're at the bottom of the NFL standings in turnover ratio, it's a bad, bad, bad thing. Tom Coughlin told his players during training camp, when we win the turnover battle, we win 83% of our games.
Right.
That is hey, I'll take those odds in Atlantic City every single time, Roman. That's 100%. A great number. That is a great number. Simply put, this is not the 86 Giants. These are not the 1990 Giants. This is not a dominant Super Bowl contender-type team where you can overcome those turnovers and still win. This is a Giants team that's in the middle of that parity-driven NFL where turnovers will be your death blow. There is no question about it, Roman.
Right. And just like when you talked about the third-down conversions, the only other team worse than the Giants in that is the Seattle Seahawks. And that's probably a lot of third-and-ones or by penalty. But what they're doing is they're not even letting teams get to third down because offensively.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, offensively, defensively creating turnovers and things like that.
That'll help.
So for me.
And by the way, they're not undefeated. Seattle's got a loss.
Yeah, so.
And that may be a reason why.
Yeah, and again, it comes back to impact plays because this game is so even. It's the 4-point differential between points on the average of every NFL game and things that come down to the fourth quarter. You've got to create turnovers. You've got to force the other team to make a mistake, and then you capitalize on that mistake. And if you look at the model of what works, New England, for example, you know, smart football, making the other team make mistakes, capitalize on the mistakes. You don't want to make a mistake against a bad team.
Boy.
And you don't want to make a mistake by, you know, drops or one thing, concentration, but you don't want to make a mistake, a special team, in a fourth quarter. That definitely puts a nail in the coffin in a football game.
This is a stat that I have to say, folks, and, you know, I keep a book of my own individual coaches-type stats all the time. I mean, you guys know I'm legendary for looking at film and stuff. It's what I do. I spend how many hours every night doing it. But let me tell you something. I've never done this, Roman, and maybe I should because you just made a great point. I think every week, every team, they talk about trying to minimize mistakes, but there were going to be X number of plays where they screwed up. And they left it out there. And the question becomes not only how many plays did you screw up, but then how many of those plays did the opponent take advantage of?
Exactly.
Now,
exactly.
In the Giants' case last weekend, let's put this game out as an example. They played the Cardinals.
Right.
And the Giants in the fourth quarter had four drops, had two fumbles, had a missed tackle on a punt return that wound up going for a 71-yard touchdown. Okay. These are all self-destructive mistakes. Now, the drops, you can't say the other team took advantage of unless they wind up getting an interception off of a drop deflection. You know what I'm talking about. So let's put that aside. The Cardinals didn't take advantage of any of those. But what the Cardinals did do, they took advantage of a ball that bounced off of a shoulder pad of a defensive lineman, Tommy Kelly.
Who I played against. I mean, that shows this guy's still
okay.
Old enough to be playing.
So that's not a mistake, but it was a fluke that they took advantage of.
Right.
They took advantage of the missed tackle on the punt return. They took advantage of the fumble by Demps deep in Giants territory and turned that into points. They took advantage of a fumble by Jennings by recovering the fumble. And although they didn't have to do much with it, it just snuffed out the Giants' potential comeback.
Right.
So in most cases, not only did the Giants leave plays out there and make mistakes, but the Cardinals were able to take advantage of them. How many times will you go into a game and make some mistakes, and if the other team's not that good, maybe they don't take advantage of them.
Right.
Maybe they don't recover the two fumbles.
Yeah, I mean,
and then
what
happens?
How many times has a team turned the ball over midfield, defense forces three and out, and you get the ball back again, so it's a wash.
Didn't happen last week. Yeah, Arizona took advantage of most of the Giants' miscues.
Whatever that stat is called, it should five critical plays that the other team took advantage of that resulted in
plays you left out there
that the other team took advantage
left
of.
Left yourself open, and they capitalized.
Yeah.
Because there are going to be those plays every week. Every team's going to have them. I don't care how good you are. Even the undefeated Patriots that one season, regular season undefeated Patriots, we should add, even they left plays out there every week. But I guarantee you, if you look at the percentage of how many times the opponent took advantage of them, it's probably very low.
And coaches, and I think I've heard a few coaches say this, it really comes down to making one or two less mistakes than the other team. And that's
right.
What good teams do. I know
JD, you're next on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Hello.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Anytime.
Roman, just wanted to say, you know, it's really great that you're doing this show. And I think you know, it's a rare opportunity that the fans, you know, get to have a chance to interact with somebody with your experience, your knowledge, and, you know, just I think it's a great thing. One of the questions I had was there were some interesting things that we got to see in the preseason before we kind of knew what this offense was going to look like. And one of the things that we saw, I think there was a couple of plays where I had never seen Eli run this, but they were actually doing a moving line and moving pocket. I'm not exactly sure what it's called, but the whole line was moving, you know, to one side, and Eli was rolling out to that side as well.
Yes, run action pass.
Right.
Versus play action pass. Run action pass.
Yeah, and I guess that's one of the things you can do to kind of give your quarterback a little more time to throw the ball.
But Eli's not real mobile. You don't want to be doing that too often with him.
No, let him finish your question.
Go ahead.
We'll respond. Go ahead, Jay.
Sorry, yeah. And, you know, maybe not that exact type of play is something that, you know, like Paul said, you don't want Eli doing that all the time. But I guess my question was, when you're having difficulty giving your quarterback time, as we are, you know, Eli's average time to throw this year is 2.4 seconds, according to Pro Football Focus. So what are some of the things you can do from a play-calling standpoint to kind of give your quarterback a little more time naturally by the play that you're running?
Well, thanks, JD. And I think it comes down to a few things. And depending on who what your game plan is for the week, depending on your opponents and what their strengths are, you can sometimes, some teams like to move around the line of scrimmage, so you huddle them, you quick snap them. Some teams, you have to move outside the pocket so that you can create plays because they're not really good defensively with their outside linebackers, safeties covering people in the flats. Some teams, you have to run a lot of bunch because as the routes develop out of that bunch, they don't defend that very well. Phil Simms told me, I went over his house. We meet every summer just in his house to watch film. He's got this big film room, and he talks about defenses not liking bunch formations. I mean, they hate it because you've got to uncover everybody, and safeties get confused, and everybody's running across. So it all depends what the game plan is for that week. So there aren't any real plays that specifically you can etch and stand that every week are going to work against the defense. But that run action pass, where the pocket moves and you get rid of the ball quickly, which is good because you've sent two guys on the go, maybe have a flat back on a wheel route or something like
right.
that. And if you hold it, maybe there's something open on the backside. So those things do work. And that, when it's called run action pass, where you move the pocket versus play action pass, where you're faking the run and then setting up and throwing the ball. A quarterback like Eli Manning can do well in run action pass because you're really only running hash to hash or hash to numbers. I mean, Eli Manning can run 10 yards and throw a football. I mean,
yeah.
I'm not saying he – look, I know the model of what quarterbacks are doing now and the athletic ability, and it used to just be one Michael Vick. Now you got 10 Michael Vicks running all up and down the field.
I'm not a big fan of having him run much. That's all.
But I remember, and he's a good friend of mine, Ray Lucas, when he was at the Jets.
Right.
And those when he replaced Vinny Testaverde in those days, he was a better athlete than he was a quarterback.
Sure.
And you had to keep it so simple for him. But you had to keep moving the pocket and dumping it to backs and tight ends. And you had to keep running all these screens just to slow down the pass rush and give him enough confidence to move downfield. And then every now and then you took your shots. Eli Manning obviously is 10 times better than Ray Lucas. And Ray Lucas will tell you that. He was lucky to play the 8-9 years that he played in the NFL. A very hardworking player. But it really comes down, and this has become such a chess match with offensive and defensive coordinators. It really comes down, guys, to what you can do based on what you think the defense is going to give you.